continue unchecked for a short time, then nodded at Sorvold, who again hammered his little bell. Gradually the uproar subsided. "Good people," said the cripple, hands raised in supplication. "I can no longer serve you as your king. The magic that so lately flowered in my breast has withered and died. In memory of the love you bore my late and so lamented father, that you bear me in his memory, I beg you to accept this decision without remonstrance, and instead devote your loyalty to King Conroyd the First. And if anyone here should think to dally with notions of challenging his accession, be warned. It is my right and duty to name an heir, and I have done so. A second schism hurts all, and helps none. If you truly love me, be satisfied with my decision, and Baal's mercy on us all." More buzzing, tears and consternation. "Lastly," the former king said, raising his voice above the din, "I would touch upon the matter of my Ulken administrator." And silence fell like the blade of an axe. "As many of you doubtless know, Asher is arrested for crimes against Baal and this kingdom, and soon will pay the price in full. I think I need not say how grieved I am. What I will say is this, that no matter how heinous they might be, the actions of one Ulken must never be counted the actions of all. To do so would be a gross injustice and a violation of Baal's intentions in this land. Guard against revenge and retribution, my lords, my ladies, and dear gentlefolk. Guard against it at the peril of your souls. I know King Conroyd will." A ripple of whispers through the watching Ulken. There were tears in the cripple's eyes now, leaking onto his cheeks. His hands were unsteady on the speaker's lectern. "I hope you know how I've loved you," he added, his voice breaking. "Please believe that my actions today spring from that true devotion. Better that I should die than any harm come to you and yours through me. Baal bless you all, and guide King Conroyd to wisdom and mercy." One of the Ulken leaped to his feet.
"Baal's blessing on you, sir! Baal's blessing on Prince Gar!"
The cry was taken up at once, shouted by Ulken and Doranan alike. Morg watched, amused, as all the councillors leaped to their expensively shod feet and roared their acclaim as Gar made his way towards the hall's exit. Beside him, Hose said grudgingly,
"Well, he managed that quite acceptably."
He patted the cleric's arm.
"Dear Ephraim, do you think so?"
And left the fool staring as he descended to the floor of the hall, meeting the cripple by the large double doors.
"Thin ice, Runtling," he murmured. "Very thin ice."
"I'm glad you recognize your danger, Conroyd," said the cripple. "Are you a historian, sir? If not, I suggest you pick up a book. The past is peopled with unwise individuals who forgot that brute force leads to nothing but defeat. The name Morg springs to mind."
Startled, he stared more closely at the runt.
"And what do you know of Morg, cripple?"
Gar shrugged. "Only what any half-intelligent person knows, that he was a small man who tried to make himself larger with violence, and failed. I hope you learn from his example, for your sake."
He laughed, laughed until tears pricked his borrowed eyes, then patted Gar sharply on the cheek.
"The carriage is waiting. Return to your tower, boy. When I want you again, be sure I'll send a lackey. And mind you remember the terms of your freedom, for I will not hesitate to change them. Defy me, and I'll place guards at all your doors and grievously punish those who seek to aid you."
For long moments, the cripple stared at him. Then he turned his back and left. Morg watched him for a moment, still vastly amused, then forgot him, basked instead in the music of obedience and acclaim soaring upwards to the hall's distant rafters.
Hail our King Conroyd! Hail our King Conroyd! Baal bless our King Conroyd, well a worker of Lur!
Their desperate pleasure at his ascension floated him all the way to the dais the cripple had just vacated for the last time. Listening to their eager cries, he felt a shriveling contempt. They were all cattle, these peasants and their overlords. There wasn't a man among them worthy of anything but slaughter. Standing before them, hands folded on the lectern, he let his gaze roam their animal faces as they continued to shout and stamp. Cattle? No. Even cattle had a semblance of purpose. The Olkin and Dorinan of this pallid kingdom were sheep, willing to follow anyone who could promise them peace and an endless procession of magical days. It made him ill to see it, that a race as majestic and proud as the Dorinan should come to this, this bleating, following, milling flock. Whatever strength Baal's escapees had possessed, it was bled to nothing here in their descendants. Their descendants were paper Dorinan, destined all to burn. He unfolded his hands and held them up in modest appeal.
Good people! Good people, I beg you! Enough!
Ragged silence. Those fools who'd leaped to their feet resumed their seats. Like penned sheep who heard the rattle of the gate unlocking, they stared and waited, hoping for food.
My dear counselors, he said, infusing his voice with sorrow, these are dark days indeed. Our beloved kingdom has come to a pretty pass, brought to the brink of destruction by the actions of one misguided man. I know, he raised one hand in warning, you loved your former king. Love him still as a prince and the sad representative of a fallen house. I commend your love, my subjects. I do. Your willingness to overlook his profound errors of judgment tells me all I need to know of your hearts. Good hearts. Stout hearts. But not, perhaps, as wise Baal might wish them to be.
A muttering now, and a flurry of exchanged glances. He waited a moment, then rode roughshod over their objections.
Blind devotion is a dangerous thing, he told them. It was blind devotion that handed power to the traitor Asher, furnishing him with the means to dabble in forbidden magic.
Another pause, as a gasp rippled its way through the flock.
Only Baal knows the true intent of his black, unloving heart. Only Baal knows what damage he has wrought in the paradise she died to create.
Noel Daltrey, always reliable, stood and cried out,
What are you saying, Your Majesty? Do you think the kingdom's in danger?
The kingdom was in danger from the day Gar elevated that stinking fisherman to heights he didn't deserve, he replied.
Conroyd's belief that, fervently and passionately felt, shared.
Now I fear we face more than mere danger. I fear we face catastrophe.
Not muttering now, but cries of consternation, Daltrey exchanged horrified looks with the rest of Conroyd's counselor friends.
Do you say the wall itself is in jeopardy?
The thought was so appalling it froze their voices in their throats. Stricken, Daltrey sank back slowly to his seat. Morg nodded.
Hard as I find it to say so, Lord Daltrey. Yes, I fear it might well be.
No! They shouted, thawed by terror. Save us!
They begged him with tears in their eyes. Holes stood uninvited and raised his voice above the lamentations.
"Counselors, control yourselves! In blessed Baal's name, I command you, have faith!"
As the noise subsided, he continued,
"Baal will not let her wall be defeated. Has she not delivered us from Asher's evil and given us into the care of King Conroid, in whom her power resides? Have faith, I tell you, and be guided by his majesty."
Ah, Ephraim, Baal sodden but useful. Morg nodded to the cleric, then turned back to the assembled counselors.
"I am your king," he said quietly as Hole sat down. "Of course I will save you, but I fear it won't be easy. Thanks to Asher's meddling, the balance of magical power in the kingdom is gravely disturbed. How badly the wall is affected, I don't yet know. But we must face the bitter truth. It is affected."
The Ilken counselors were moaning, covering their faces with trembling hands and rocking on their haunches. Every Doranan eye was upon them, and the looks were far from friendly.
"In his lust for a power that was never meant for him, Asher has endangered the life of every soul in this kingdom," said Morg, letting his words bite now like the tip of a lash. "And every Ulken who encouraged him to think he was more than an Ulken bears a share of his guilt. Fear not, I will not punish the undeserving. But I tell you here and now, guildmeisters and mistresses of Lur, look hard at your people. Examine their behaviors, for henceforth I hold you accountable and will see you answer for their sins."
Not a sound from the Ulken. And if any one of them had harbored some lingering affection for Asher, the looks on their faces told him it was stone dead now. He hid a smile. Hole said,
"And what of the wall, your majesty? What of the weather working?"
"History shows us we have a period of grace," he replied. "Some short time to live without weatherworking before we are undone. Therefore I shall withdraw from the public eye, that I might take into myself the weather magics and study how best to apply them, to undo the damage Asher has wreaked and avert a dire disaster."
Now it was Payne Sorvold who spoke.
"You'll require a master magician, your majesty."
He nodded.
"I shall appoint Derm's successor once this crisis is past, Lord Sorvold. For now, all I need to help me restore our beloved kingdom is contained in his books and journals. Have no fear, sir. I shall prevail."
Sorvold nodded.
"Yes, your majesty. And what of your majesty's privy council?"
He felt his expression harden.
"It too must wait until the crisis is past."
He unpinned his gaze from Sorvold's frowning face and swept it around the hall.
"Good people, do you not yet understand? By the merest whisper have we escaped a disaster of Asher's making. Life as once we knew it has changed, perhaps forever. Listen now, as I explain more fully what I mean."
Carted back to the tower like so much lumber, Gar stifled a groan when he saw Darren waiting for him on his palatial prison's front steps. Even dredged up a smile as the old man bowed and insisted on opening the carriage door for him. The gesture came hard, though. Any brief satisfaction he'd felt in defying Conroid before the General Council, of warning him to leave the Ulken alone, had faded. All he felt now was ill, and tired, and desperately sad.
"Well, old friend, it's done," he said, as Conroid's carriage rattled away. "I am again Prince Gar the Magicless."
There were tears in Darren's eyes.
"Yes, sir."
He willed his own eyes to stay dry.
forced his voice to remain steady and strong. "It's for the best. What can any of this be but Baal's will, after all? My magic is gone, and that's hardly Conroy's fault. In truth, none of this is his fault. I may hate him, but I can't blame him, at least not for being the best remaining magician in the kingdom."
"No, sir."
"I'm going to the stables now, to say goodbye to the horses before..." Darren touched his sleeve.
"I'm so sorry, sir. They're already gone. Men from the Livestock Guild. I couldn't stop them. They had written orders from from the king. It was all I could do to hide the little donkey. If we keep it in a pasture down the back, no one will know we have it. I just thought, well, it may come in useful. As a lawnmower, if nothing else."
Poor Darren. He looked so stricken, so brimful of guilt. "It's all right," Gar said gently. "Of course you couldn't stop them. Balladair, oh, Balladair." "Well, if there's no point visiting the stables, I'll go for a walk instead. Don't fret if I'm gone for some time, Darren. I have a lot to think about."
"Yes, sir," said Darren.
And as Gar turned away, said,
"Sir?"
Gar looked back. "Yes?"
"Be careful. Don't walk too far. Don't give that man an excuse to take anything else."
He smiled. "What is there left for him to take, Darren?" Darren stepped closer, his face screwed up with pain and trepidation.
"Your life."
"My life?" He laughed. "Aha! Yes, my life. Do you know something, Darren? I'm beginning to think he can have it, and welcome."
"Sir!"
Relenting, he patted the old man's shoulder. "It's all right," he said, and started to back away. "I was joking." Darren shook a finger at him, just as he used to when he worked at the palace and was scolding a younger, happier Gar.
"Really? Well, as jokes go, it wasn't the least bit funny."
Turning his back on Darren's disapproval, he walked away and kept on walking until his family's crypt appeared among the trees. Quite possibly he was breaking Conroy's rules by coming this far, but he didn't care. If Conroy thought to keep him from his family, he was very much mistaken. As ever, the crypt was cool, dark. Fumbling for lantern and matches, skinning his knuckles, he tried to forget that once light had been his for the asking. The amplified candlelight cast attenuated shadows up the walls and across the faces of his family. He kissed his father and his mother, tickled his sister's feet, arranged himself uncomfortably on the floor. "I'm sorry," he said into the silence. "I'd have come sooner, but a lot has happened since you left." His mother whispered,
"That's all right, dear. You're a busy man."
"Not as busy as you might think," he replied. "Father, I have a confession. I've lost the two best things you ever gave me, your crown and your horse. It seems you raised a careless son." A father's disappointment.
"Very. Can't you get them back again?"
"Of course he can't. He's useless."
A sister's angry scorn. "I'm sorry," he repeated. "I did the best I could. Unfortunately, my best proved inadequate to the task." Silence. Were they really speaking, or was his mind at last unhinged? And if it was, did it even matter?
"Typical," he heard Fane sneer. "Whinge, moan, sigh. It's a wonder you didn't die years ago, drowned in a butt of self-pity. Don't just sit there, idiot. Do something."
Even imagined the sharp words sting. He grabbed hold of his sister's stone foot and hauled himself upright.
"Do what?" he demanded of her. I am powerless, exiled in my own city, discarded, irrelevant, and alone. What would you do if you were me?
The answer came not in words, but as a spearing shaft of memory, of intent abandoned. Baal's diary. If Derm was right, their only hope. How or why, he had no idea, but he trusted Derm. He had to. He had nowhere else to turn. Damn it, how could he have forgotten? He had to find that diary, had to go back to the tower now and search Derm's books again before Conroyd discovered their removal and took them away. No matter, he'd searched the collection twice without luck. The diary had to be there, cunningly hidden, as was Derm's devious habit. Please, Baal, let me find it. Show me a way out of this disaster. He dropped a grateful kiss on his sister's cold stone cheek and ran all the way back to the tower.
Chapter 24.
Blistered and weary, the knapsack on her back as heavy as an anvil, Daphne trudged along the empty road that led to the Black Woods, to Vera and her village, beating at the timber heart. There was dust on her face, turned streakily to mud by infrequent, unhelpful tears. She was chilled, she was hungry, she was eaten with despair. The sun had set 2 hours earlier, and weak moonlight was her only guide. She'd tripped and stumbled a dozen times, lost her footing completely, and crashed to the roadway once. Her scraped knees and elbows stung viciously. Her tired mind was one vast and aching bruise.
Asher, Asher, Asher.
She hardly recognized herself, so diminished felt her spirit. Misery was a crushing weight, compressing her bones to chalk. She never knew she could feel so small.
Asher.
That catastrophe seemed worse even than the now unstoppable onslaught of the final days. Asher was flesh and blood to her. He was laughter and whispers and calloused fingers touching, pleasure like magic coursing through her veins. The final days were unimaginable. For all her frightened dreaming, she couldn't seem to make them real. But Asher was real. Asher was arrested, and unless some miracle intervened, Asher was dead, along with any hope for the kingdom's future. The thought knifed pain through her whole body, so swift and severe she couldn't walk. Gasping, hurting, she braced her hands upon her thighs and waited for the torment to ease. A kind of wild rushing wind stormed through her mind, blotting out thought, obliterating memory. She welcomed it. Gradually the pain eased and reason returned. She straightened, inch by hesitant inch. The night stretched forth for miles around her, inhabited by stars and trees and small rustling creatures. Then, carrying keenly on the thin cold air, new sounds. Horseshoes ringing hollow on hard-packed clay, slowing from a brisk jog to a cautious walk. A wooden creak of turning wheels. Approaching round the bend ahead, a looming shape framed in dancing torchlight. Heart pounding, she waited for the cart to reach her, watched as the shaggy brown pony pulling it slowed, then stopped in a puffing cloud of breath. She looked up into the hooded, mysterious face of the person holding the pony's reins. Gnarled hands pushed the hood back onto rounded, slumping shoulders.
Daphne,
she nodded, tried to smile.
Vera.
Well, child, the old woman said and sniffed. If you were a few years younger and my joints a little less creaky, I'd fling your skirts up over your head and put you over my knee for this.
Daphne stared at her, speechless. In the torchlight, Vera's face leaped and flickered with shadows.
But you're a young woman, and I'm an old one.
and I don't suppose a paddling would make either of us feel any better. So don't just stand there, gawking. Come up here beside me and let's get you home to bed."
They travelled in awkward silence for nearly 3 hours, along the narrow road that drew them deep into the black woods like a crooked, beckoning finger. At first the trees grew thinly, with spindly trunks and lacy foliage, but the further the pony ambled them into the gloom-ridden forest, the more robust and vigorous the jelbas, honey pines, and weeping noras became. The air grew close and still as more and more of the star-strewn sky disappeared from view. Even though she was miles closer now to Baal's wall and the mountains that anchored it, its golden glow was reduced to a smeary shadow. Anyone living within this sea of trees could easily forget the wall existed. She wished she could. Her nose was tickled by the scent of rich, rotting mulch. She caught the sound of trickling water somewhere to the left. Keeping herself distracted, she let her gaze roam the encroaching forest as it rolled along beside her. Caught sight of a glowing orange fungus on a fallen tree trunk. Newti, good for enhancing concentration, and wished she could ask Vera to stop the cart. Newti was hard to come by in the countryside round the city. The city. Her home for 6 long years, but now a place of danger she could never visit again. At least not until. And always assuming there was anything left to visit afterwards. Was her absence noticed yet? Had anyone raised the alarm? Were they hunting for her even now? Well, let them hunt. Let them turn the city upside down. They'd find no clue to help them. No guiding trail of breadcrumbs. She'd escaped. She was safe. She'd abandoned Asher behind her. The passing forest blurred and she rubbed a hand across her face. If Vera saw it, she didn't say so. All her attention was on the pony and the winding road ahead. Daphne pulled her coat more tightly round her ribs, wondering what would happen to a bookshop, that convenient mask she'd come to love, despite herself, and all her things in her tiny rooms above it. Obeying Vera's command, she'd brought with her only the items that might raise suspicion. Her circle stone, her orris root, the tannel leaf, other herbs and simples not generally found in an oaken pantry, a few clothes, too, for necessity, a dragonfly in amber, gifted to her from Asher the first Grand Baal's day after his arrival in Dorna. She felt her heart hitch and fisted her fingers in her lap. She would not think of Asher. Beside her, Vera cleared her throat.
"Another half hour and we'll be there, near enough," she said.
Daphne nodded.
"Good."
It was strange to hear the old woman's voice out loud, a sweet and solid sound, after so long with nothing but circle-stone communication, mind to mind. Even seeing her was a shock. In the link, she'd seemed younger, smoother, less wrinkled. Aware of the scrutiny, Vera chuckled breathily and glanced at her sidelong.
"Told you I weren't no oil-painting child."
She felt her cheeks heat.
"I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be rude,
Her fingernails were close to drawing blood, so tightly were they clenched against her palms.
"I'm sorry."
And not just for staring. She was sorry for everything.
"I know,"
said Vera, and patted her on one blanketed knee. She blinked her vision clear.
"You warned Matt all right? He's safe?"
"As safe as any of us," said Vera.
"I handled that badly,"
she whispered, pinning her fists between her knees. The look on his face as she sided with Asher.
"I handled it all badly. I've no business being part of the circle. Prophecy is falling to pieces and it's all my fault."
In the flickering torchlight, Vera's expression was a mystery.
"You don't know that, child. Best not to run ahead of ourselves. This business ain't done with till the wall's fallen down, and last time I looked, it was still standing."
"Then we're not lost?
The kingdom can still be saved? Asher won't... She couldn't finish the sentence out loud. Didn't even dare complete the thought.
I hope not, Vera said at last. We'll do our best to save him, though I fear it will come at a terrible cost.
You have a plan? Another long silence.
I have an inkling of a possibility, said Vera, without looking at her. I'll not be speaking of it yet. I've others to consult and hard thinking to do first.
And that sounded less than encouraging. Sounded frightening, dangerous, likely to fail. In Vera's comfortable voice, there told a premonition of sorrow. She'd had enough sorrow for one day. I can't imagine living in a forest, she said, staring at the branch-latticed sky. Vera smiled, revealing crooked teeth.
I can't imagine living anywhere else. Not anymore.
Do you like it?
Well, enough. A forest's cool, quiet, and there's always fresh rabbit when the fancy takes me.
Yes, but what do you do? How do you live? In all the time she and Vera had known each other, she'd never once asked. Once, it hadn't seemed important.
I'm a truffle hunter, said Vera. Means nobody asks me why I live so far out from the village, why I spend so much time alone with my pigs.
A breathy chuckle.
Mind you, the pigs is more for company. I got easier ways of finding truffles than parading about the forest with a pig on a leash. Good listeners, pigs. Better than most people I know.
And the other villagers? What do they do? Why would they choose to live in such isolation? Vera shrugged and rattled the reins to keep the pony up to its bridle.
It's only isolated from the Doranan. The village is a happy, close-knit place. Lively. And there's a mort of things to do in the Black Woods, child. Burying, mushrooming, trapping, herbals and dye plants, sweet sap, wood carving, clock making, bees. Some of this kingdom's finest honey comes from our bees, you know. Oh, yes. The Black Woods are full of bounty for those who aren't afraid of the dark.
Oh, she said, feeling ignorant, feeling helpless. She should have brought some books to sell. Well, I had no idea.
No reason you should do, child, said Vera comfortably.
Is the village large?
Large enough. 114 families, last count.
Vera pointed ahead of them to the right.
Over that a ways it is.
And how will you account for me? I've always been told villagers are a curious lot. They'll want to know who I am, where I'm from.
No, they won't, said Vera. I've done a tidy job of keeping myself a loner. Folks know me, but only as deep as I want 'em to, and only when I go to them. I discouraged visitors years ago.
Clicking her tongue, she once more rattled the plump pony's reins.
Get on with you, Bessie. You ought to be smelling home by now.
Not long after that, they turned left onto a rutted grass-grown roadway, followed it in silence, and at last reached Vera's thatched stone cottage, all alone in the wooded vastness of the forest. Warm light glowed through a curtained front window. The night air smelled of jasmine and moon roses, the flowers' perfume mingling with the spicy, sweet scent of honey pine smoke drifting out of the cottage's chimney. Vera eased the cart to a halt by the open front gate.
Bessie's bedroom's round the back. Get yourself inside, child, while I see the poor beast settled. Stir up the hob and put on the kettle like a good girl. I'm parched for some hot sweet tea.
Oh, yes, yes, tea. Clasping blanket and knapsack, Daphne clambered out of the wagon and made her unsteady way up the garden path. She felt stupid with tiredness. More than anything else, she wanted quiet and somewhere to rest her aching head. Just as she reached the front door, it opened. Matt. Tall, frowning, swallowing all the space in the small doorway. Here? In Vera's cottage? She felt the knapsack slip from her fingers, heard a tinkling crunch as something broke inside it. Or did the sound come from inside her? She couldn't tell, couldn't speak, could only stare and stare and stare.
"Hello, Daphne," said Matt, unsmiling. "Welcome to the Black Woods."
When Asher groped his way back to reluctant consciousness, he found himself in a different cage. This one was outside, on a cart in the middle of the city square, just as Geralt had promised. The straw beneath his huddled body was fouled and stinking. There were heavy iron manacles on his wrists and ankles, connected by a short, heavy chain. The manacles' inner surfaces were rough and rusty, chafing. The pain was small compared to the enormous hurting in the rest of his abused body. Geralt had been thorough and enthusiastic. Bastard! Who knew he'd wanted that damned king's cup so bad, eh? Pity I didn't just let the mongrel have it. Might have saved me a lot of grief. It was dark, late. Hovering glimfire splashed shadows and soft light. Standing at attention a few feet from the nearest corner of his cage, a poker-backed city guard. If he'd wanted to, he could have called the man's name out loud. He didn't want to. Also, as promised, his throat was raw and swollen. Only one thing kept him from surrendering to despair. They hadn't found Daphne. Auric had returned to report his failure, refusing to look at Geralt's bleeding, moaning victim hanging in his chains. So, no Daphne, and no Matt either. It seemed that sulking out of sight somewhere after their quarrel had saved him. Thwarted of more victims, Geralt had been furious, had returned to his vengeance with greater vigour. Asher shuddered, remembering. He would have died happily then, knowing she was safe, that they both were safe. But Geralt knew to perfection how to hurt and hurt, yet keep him on the wrong side of death's door. He blinked, shivering, trying to clear his pain-blurred vision, unfolded his arms and legs, needing to ease his cramped muscles. His putrid straw bed rustled, pressing against his filthy shirt and trousers, his burned and bloodied flesh. From somewhere quite close, a shout.
"He's awake! The blasphemous bastard's awake!"
He lifted his head. Four guards, not one. Four men who once had been his friends, matched to each corner of his cage. He strained to see past their blue and crimson uniforms. Slowly, achingly, the world swam into sharper focus. What he saw stopped his heart, or so it felt. Beyond the cage, beyond the guards, beyond the wavering circle of glimlight, a sullen shifting mass of silent faces. The Ulken of Dorana City had come to feast their eyes on the traitor. Wincing, breathing harshly through pinched nostrils and gritted teeth, he made himself sit up, even though it hurt so much he thought he might vomit again. There were faces out there that he knew. Guildmeisters he'd counselled. Guild members he'd helped. Turning his head, looking over his shoulder, he saw more friends. People he'd drunk ale with down at the Goose. People who'd laughed to see him. Thrown roses without thorns. Flirted. Flattered. Boasted that he knew them and smiled at his approach. Screamed his name as he'd travelled the road to Justice Hall. Who'd witnessed him sitting in judgment in that grand place and applauded as though he was their hero. Nobody was applauding now. Now he wasn't anybody's hero.
"Filthy blasphemer!"
somebody called from the crowd.
"Liar! Traitor!"
Somebody threw something. An egg. It burst against the bars of the cage to drip stinking, rotten, and slimy to the floor.
the stench mixed with the reek of excrement and vomit, clogging his blood-caked nostrils, churning his stomach with acid and bile.
"I ain't!"
he croaked, and felt the split skin of his face crack and ooze.
"I ain't no more a traitor than you!"
As those in the crowd close enough to hear him burst into jeering laughter, the nearest guard turned and thrust his pike staff into the cage in a single, economical jab. It caught him in the mouth, crushing his lip against his teeth, tearing his flesh even wider.
"One more word," the guard said, "and I'll cut out your tongue. Got it?"
It was Deva. They played leapjacks together down at the Goose on the nights they found themselves there at the same time. Used to play. Deva wasn't grinning now, wasn't reaching out to slap him on the back, buy him a pint, bend his ear about the latest lady love. Now he looked cold enough to kill. Another egg came sailing out of the crowd. This one found its target, hit him on the side of the head. The smell was gut-wrenching. Somebody else threw fresh cow shit. Lukewarm but still stinking, it burned his face where Geralt had laid him open, searching for satisfaction. The guards made no attempt to stop the rain of abuse. Only when something landed too close to them did they raise their pike staffs and shout. There was no escape. All he could do was survive it, just as he'd survived Geralt. In the end, he curled up on his side and tried to ignore the shouts, the insults, the eggs, and everything else they threw at him. The pain. Concentrated instead on the one thing that would sustain him for as long as this ordeal endured. Hate. On the one name that fed his slow-burning fury. Gah. When he woke a second time, it was again to glimlit darkness and the rise and fall of unfriendly voices, sibilant as the ocean, to the smoky scents of roasting meats as food merchants catered to the avid crowds of Olcan still gathering to gloat and deride. So large had their numbers swelled that a barrier had been erected around the cart and cage, keeping the insomniac onlookers at bay, standing beyond it, pikestaffs at the ready, a different set of guards. What was wrong with the bastards, eh? Didn't they have homes to go to? Children to care for? Did they have nothing better to do than stand around here feeding their faces on sheep fat and bile? Well, no. Clearly not. Groaning, swearing as all his hurts growled, biting and colder than he ever could remember, he managed to force himself upright.
"Bowls tit,"
he began to curse under his breath, then stopped, stared, closed his fingers into fists. Willa stood outside the cage, smiling in at him. In his pudgy hands a hot beef sandwich, dripping bloody juices down the front of his apple-green jacket. He didn't seem to notice. His bloated face was shiny with grease, with triumph, and his eyes gleamed in the lambent glimfire. "I told you I'd make you pay," he said conversationally, around a mouthful of sloppily chewed bread and meat. "Didn't I?" The gloating smile widened, like a toad's. "This should teach you to disbelieve me."
"Go away,"
he said, even though he knew he was wasting his breath. Willa shivered with pleasure.
"The executioner was in the guardhouse all afternoon, sharpening his axe. I went to watch. Zzz, zzz, zzz. You'll never guess. The townsfolk are placing bets on how many strokes it'll take to do the job. They hate you, Asha. Thanks to you, Olcan life is about to change for the harder. I'm hoping it'll take 3 strokes to kill you. 4, even. I'm hoping it hurts. A lot. You deserve to suffer. You deserve everything that's happening to you."
"You're a fool, Willa," he said tiredly. "Such a damned bloody fool. You got no idea what you've done."
I know exactly what I've done, said Willa, eyes bright with malice. I've helped bring a blasphemous traitor to justice.
Dripping beef forgotten, he stepped even closer to the cage.
The guards say they heard you screaming. How I wish I'd been there to see it.
His voice was laden with longing.
All those times you disrespected me, abused me, humiliated me, insulted me with your very presence. Did you think I would forget? Did you think I would forgive? They say you shat yourself like a baby, that you...
Willa, said Darren, stepping out of the shadows. That's enough. He knows you've won. Go home. Startled, Willa spun about.
Darren, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be nursemaiding pathetic magicless Gar.
Darren came closer, smoothed out a wrinkle in the pissant's beef-stained coat.
When I think I once felt affection for you, I could vomit, he said, his voice low, shaking. Go home, before I forget myself and make a scene.
Uncertain, truculent, Willa knocked the age-spotted hand aside.
Why are you protecting him, Darren? You hate him as much as I do. You wanted him brought down as much as I did. Don't try to deny it. Give him enough rope and he'll hang himself. That's what you said. And then you preferred him over me. Me, who served you like a son for years. Why?
Darren shook his head slowly, like a teacher despairing of a backward student.
Because Gar asked me to. Because, like you, I swore to serve him with faith and loyalty. Because, unlike you, I kept my word.
Willa's jaw dropped.
Asher's a traitor, a blasphemer. He broke Baal's first law.
Yes, he did, agreed Darren, nodding. And for that he'll die. But even so, he's a better man than you'll ever be.
Suckering a traitor is treachery in itself,
hissed Willa.
I could have you arrested for that. I will have you arrested. I'm not your dog's body anymore. Now I'm a man of influence, and I won't be trifled with.
He turned away, searching for the nearest guard, and his wet pink mouth opened wide to shout. Darren's fingers closed about his arm.
I wouldn't, Willa, if I were you.
His voice was soft, more dangerous than Asher, watching and for the moment disregarded, could ever have imagined.
For a man who prides himself on his memory, you seem to have forgotten a thing or two. Even with all that's happened, I'm not without influence myself. Remember Bulletin? I do. I also have proof. The right words in the right ear and...
What?
Sea Slug Willa pulled free and backed away, his greasy face puce with fury and fear. His elbow bumped the bars of the cage.
How dare you threaten me? I'll tell the king what you've said. I'll see you thrown in prison for it. I'll...
The fat fool had forgotten where he was. Despite his chains, Asher touched his fingers to the back of the pissant's collar, seized it and twisted savagely, cutting off Willa's air with a gurgle.
You'll do nought, or I'll kill you here and now, he whispered into Willa's ear. Think I can't? Think I won't? What can they do if I wring your neck? Chop my head off twice?
With a strangled shriek, Willa wrenched himself free. The nearest guard, finally noticing the prisoner had visitors, turned. Scowling, his pike staff at the ready, he approached. Then, seeing who they were, hesitated.
Meister Darren, Meister Driscoll.
The old crow bowed.
Good evening, Jessop.
Meister Darren, you shouldn't be here, Jessop said unhappily. You neither, Meister Driscoll. We got strict orders to...
Relax, guardsman, said Darren with his oiliest smile.
His hand fell on Willa's shoulder, fingers tightening. The sea slug closed his mouth.
his expression pinched with pain. "I've orders of my own." Darren lowered his voice to a conspiratorial whisper. "Confidential. A matter of state. You understand?" Asher held his breath. Jessup was new, young, easily awed. And Darren had a reputation.
2 minutes, Meister Darren, said Jessup. Orders or no, I can't give you more than that.
Thank you, said Darren. I'll make sure your cooperation is noted in the right circles.
Jessup flushed. Just doing my job, sir. He looked at Willa. And Meister Driscoll?
Is with me, Darren said smoothly. His grasping fingers tightened further. Willa squeaked.
But he's not feeling well. A morsel of food gone down the wrong way.
He spared the slug a reproving look. One should never eat and speak at the same time, dear boy. There might be an unfortunate accident.
As Willa gasped like a landed fish, Jessup nodded, one finger raised in warning.
So it's 2 minutes, then, and only because you work for the palace.
Exactly, said Darren.
And once you're done, best mind you take care on your way home, Jessup added. The mood's a mite unchancy round here just now.
Darren nodded, smiling.
Excellent advice. Thank you.
As Jessup withdrew, Darren released his fearsome grip on Willa's shoulder.
Run away now, Willa, and forget you saw me, or I swear there'll be a reckoning you'll not forget.
Tripping over his own feet, cursing, Willa fled. Asher looked at Darren.
Bolton?
Darren sighed.
Alas, an unsavory business. I reimbursed the prince's coffers from my own pocket, kept various receipts, hidden, allowed Willa less leeway afterwards. It seemed the prudent thing to do. In hindsight, however,
prudent would have been dismissing the little turd, Asher muttered. Might have saved a lot of heartache.
Without warning, a fresh wave of pain assailed him. He slid down the cage bars again, into the filthy straw.
Darren didn't reply. Instead, just stood there, silent, his eyes unreadable, his expression composed, as his measuring gaze took in the brutal evidence of Geralt's displeasure, the dried manure and egg and other detritus, gifts from a grateful, adoring public. Asher looked away, not wanting to see his condition written plain in the old man's face.
What are you doing here, Darren? You come to gloat?
The secretary shifted his gaze and stared at the crowd.
Look at them all. By now I doubt there's a cradle-bound babe anywhere in this city who doesn't know you're arrested. And why? Within days they'll have heard it even down on the coast.
Asher closed his eyes.
That'll put a smile on my bloody brothers' faces.
Thinking of the coast, of the people there, he bit his lip, made himself look at the old crow. This was going to hurt worse than Geralt's poker.
Darren, I need a favour.
Darren drew back.
A favour?
It ain't for myself, he added quickly. Not exactly. I got a friend. Jed. We grew up together in Resthaven. He's hurt on account of doing something I asked, and won't ever get better. Since we got back from West Wailing, I've been sending him money, making sure he was looked after. When this is over, when I'm...
He took a deep, painful breath, let it out.
Dead. Can you make sure what's left of my savings finds him?
Darren's expression was a mingling of surprise and sorrow.
Asher, all your money's been confiscated. Your possessions, too. You don't have a quick or a shirt to your name.
He should have expected it.
Jed.
He swallowed anger, thought of something else and sat up sharply, no matter the pain. His heavy chains rattled.
Signet? What about Signet?
I'm sorry,
said Darren after a long pause. The stables are disbanded. Someone said, I truly am sorry, but Conroy Geralt has your horse now. It was a sharper agony than anything done to flesh and bone. He pressed his blood-stained hands to his face and felt salt sting the open wounds there, felt his hard-pressed willpower break at last. His precious signet, prey to that man's hands and heels, to cruel bits and crueler spurs. Darren stepped closer.
You should know, Asher, I've been told everything.
His voice was thinned to a whisper.
Is it true? That you can, you know.
Wrenching his thoughts away from Signet, poor Signet, he lowered his hands. What does it matter?
Asher, is it true?
He let his head rest against the cage. There was no point denying it now.
Aye, but I wouldn't go repeating it if I were you. Geralt'll kill you.
Darren seemed torn between horror and fascination.
Then, if you do have power, can't you free yourself?
He'd asked himself the same question. He supposed it was possible, in theory. He could call down a freezing on the city, say, that'd turn all its citizens into ice statues, leave him free to break out of the cage and run. But long before they'd frozen, the guards would have clubbed him unconscious, or dead. And anyway, there was nowhere to run to.
No, I can't.
Darren stepped closer still, so his face was near to touching the cage.
I know why you did it.
He let his eyes close.
Why don't matter. Not anymore. You did it because you love him.
This made him laugh. He dragged his eyelids open.
Now you believe it?
He breathed hard, trying to dull the stabbing pain. Gar was more a brother to me than Zeth or Wishes or Bede or any of them. 100 times I could have walked away. Should have. Wanted to, but I didn't. And I broke Bar's law 'cause he asked me to. 'Cause he promised to protect me and I believed him. I thought his word meant something.
His hands fisted. Better watch yourself, old maggoty man. Better take a good long look at what's happened here and ask yourself twice what you're doing staying with him. 'Cause this is where loyalty leads you.
Darren wrapped his fingers around the bars.
Asher, listen.
Beyond the cage, Jessop and the other guards had drifted into a huddle round an open brazier to drink some ale and gobble meat pies. One of them stirred up the coals with a poker. The brazier's mouth glowed with a steady, scarlet heat. Searing memory stirred. He felt his muscles contract, his bowels loosen. He was ashamed.
Asher?
Shame turned to anger.
Go away, Darren. Ain't nowt you can do here, and I'm sick of your manky old face.
Darren let go of the bars.
Not before you've heard what I came to say. I ain't interested. This wasn't Gar's fault.
He choked.
Not his fault? Of course it's his fault. He said he'd protect me, and look where I am. If you'd let me explain, then... Explain?
He said, incredulous.
Explain what?
He wanted to howl, to scream, to tighten his fingers round Darren's scrawny throat and throttle him into silence.
That it turns out Gar's gutless? I know that already. Please, Asher, you must see his position. I do see it. He's alive, and I soon won't be. He's in his tower, and I'm in this cage. I saved his life, Darren. He's only breathing today 'cause of me. I know that, said Darren, desperately whispering. He knows that. Then he has to stop this. He owes me, old man. Oh, Asher, said Darren, his voice breaking.
Don't you think he'd save you if he could? He can't. His hands are tied. He...
Tied?
He said savagely, and raised his manacled wrists. Well, mine are bloody chained. Darren stepped back, his face grey and drawn. He knows that too, and he's sorry, Asha. You've no idea how sorry he is, but there's nothing he can do. There were threats made, dreadful threats, against him, against the Olkan people. He had to sign that proclamation.
He's the king, Darren! He can bloody unsign it!
There were tears in Darren's eyes. Tears. Not anymore. Haven't they told you? This afternoon he renounced his crown in favor of Conroy Geralt. Our new king has confined him to the tower and stripped him of authority. For all the good he can do you now, for all the good he can do himself, Gar might as well be in that cage with you. Hope's last embers died. Despairing, Asher flung himself at the iron bars separating him from Darren and pressed his face against them.
I wish he was! You tell him that, you stinking old maggot! Tell him he's the traitor and it's his head they ought to cut off with their sharp and shiny axe! But since it'll be mine, tell him I hope he dies a long, slow death years and years from now, and that every minute of every day of every one of them years is agony, and that every time he closes his eyes he sees my face, the face of the friend he murdered.
Exhausted, shuddering, he felt himself start sliding down the bars.
Go on, you bastard! Tell him!
Jessup must have heard him then, because he left his fellow guards, marched back to the cage and poked his pike staff between the bars. Asher barely felt its sharp tip puncture his skin.
Watch your mouth, traitor!
Jessup growled, then turned to Darren. I'm sorry, sir, but you've had more than 2 minutes, and...
It's all right, said Darren. I'm leaving now.
Right then, said Jessup. He sounded relieved. Good night to you, sir.
Good night, Jessup, replied Darren, turning. And goodbye, Asher.
He summoned a skerrick of saliva and spat.
Piss on you, Darren, and piss on that treacherous shit in the tower.
Jessup hit him again, and again, until all he could do was lie face down on the floor of the cage, breathing in the stench of shit and egg and vomit, grunting with each blow. Moments later, the other guards joined in. The sounds of their dedicated fury mingled with the shouts and applause of the crowd. Not soon enough, the world went away. Chapter 25. Morg stood before Conroy's dressing room mirror and admired the way his blue brocade dressing gown brought out his eyes. Behind him, Conroy's wife continued to wail.
But you can't send me away,
Atian protested, perilously close to stamping her foot.
I'm the queen now, Conroy. I belong in the palace.
He sighed and smoothed his unbound blonde hair. She belonged in a coffin buried 6 feet deep.
My dear, I know. And when the time is right, the palace is where you'll be. Where we both will be. With the House Geralt